If you cannot provide an actual price, an actual number, X million pesos for 1 kilometer of road, what you can possibly do is you can make a formula for something. And that formula will go to the formula will go to whoever is going to be building the road, will apply the certain elements of that formula, which is to say that the cost of cement is this much, the cost of fuel is this much, the one amount that you pay the engineers is this much, etc., etc. And from that, you can, that formula, the numbers, will actually move according to market forces. So it's a little bit complicated and it requires a great deal of study, but it's something that, as I said, is being used in places like India, it's being used in places like the Indian subcontinent, and quite successfully. So I think it bears looking into. So that's one practical solution. The other practical solution, as I said, is basically to continue to prosecute anyone who is found to be in the field. And as I said, we've seen so many investigations, exposés where people have actually been exposed on them and have been proven in everybody's mind, but they have not been denied and they have not been punished. And some of them have even been rewarded for doing the dirty job. So if that's the culture, no matter what we mean, so we have to change the culture first. Then we put in whatever methods we can dream up, we can think of to make it a little bit more, make procurement a little bit more standardized. A little bit now.
I just like to follow up on the moral, on the corruption, because your father was also, I mean, among the fight against corruption. Would you have the moral as an individual? I mean, based on the history that we got that time?
Well, for one thing, none of the accusations made against my father were true.
Why is that true?
Because they're not true. Number two, nothing, at no point in my political career have I ever been under suspicion of any wrongdoing. So I have every right to talk.
I'll just get back to you later on the other questions coming, but I want to give a chance to the other bloggers first.
Pardon? Some people are saying that there are the service contract existence. That's what I forgot to say. There are the service contract existence. Some people say that being a Marcos is a negative thing for the campaign. What's your reaction to that? Pero obvious naman natin sa but this is a service. You're doing well.
Di maraming athletes lang madalas na nakakaroon niya. And I have to think really, really hard. Because nag-iisip ako ng instance na ang pakiramdam ko naging disadvantage ito ko ako. And I cannot think of one. I cannot think of one instance where I can say, kung di lang ako Marcos, mas magandang takot ko, ano man yung ginawa ko. And quite the contrary. Madalas, I come away from an event or a meeting or some kind of interaction with people, with politicians. And I think, after it's done, nagbibigay ng tulong, ang daming nagsusuporta. Na hindi magbibigay ng ganyang klaseng tulong, suporta, at hindi man makikinig sa iyo kung hindi ka pwede na Marcos. Kaya maliwan, at least in my experience, it's very, very, very clear that those are, that this has been an advantage. Ngayon, siyempre, other than usual question that follows that, is that what about all the people na who opposed your father? Eh, kung hindi ka alam ng tatay mo, they would oppose you. But now, since you're done, they will oppose you now. So that's a disadvantage. Well, not really. Because no matter what you do in politics, you will have opposition. So that's an actual expected level. So the fact that I have opposition just makes me the same as everyone else. But the fact that I have people I can run to, people I can expect help from, people who offer their help, people who have a history in my family, both in politics, both as a personal, but as an individual, and as a politician, and as their president, that one of those assets, opportunities, potentials would simply not be available to other people. So I consider it to be a huge advantage. I consider myself to be very, very lucky that I was born for this one.
You can always count on support from my family.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we are helping each other.
I know, sabi ni Tita Tusig, thanks.
I know. We were always together with when you watch us on stage, kami yung lagi nagbubuwis mo isa.
May din sabi ni Esther.
She's great. The first time we meet sa Tatina. Meron that was before. That was after you heard and about. Musta. She spoke very well, and so that's why we seem to agree on many things, and we have always something to talk about and to giggle about. So we're always together, you know. So.
Sir, do you think it's
do you think what's happening right now, because if I'm not mistaken, this is the second time that you ran for senator. I voted for you the first time, and I still vote for you again. Do you think it's now the time that generally the Filipinos are beginning to look at what happened in 1986 on another perspective?
Not to begin with, I think when I ran in 1995, you have to remember, and I have to apologize to you, that your votes weren't counted. Because if you remember, that was the election where Dagdag Bawas was invented. We never heard of the term Dagdag Bawas until the 1995 election. And so there was a very clear effort. In fact, we have identified the effort. We identified the operation, in fact, that was made against me to make sure that I didn't get into the Senate. And so, it's part of the political game. And at that time we didn't have a handle on it. We weren't able to oppose it because those who were very powerful at the time were very adamant that I did not win a Senate seat. Those people are no longer around. Those people are no longer working against me in the same way from the positions that the other officers were working against me in 1995. Secondly, and this is more direct answer to your question. Secondly, in 1995, it's conceivable to say that the Marcoses were still anti-political. The Marcoses are kami mismo. That if your political column, let's say, or your political your place in the political topography of the Philippines was partially defined by your stand on the Marcos. Hence, when I say it's a political, that's no longer the case now. We simply are the political leaders. Those issues have really been put to rest. Because I think it's very clear that the voters now are the basis for comparison. Those who were criticizing us before were promising liberal stars. They have since been in office, and it is people are able now to make a comparison as to who did a better job in administering government and providing services and public services. So that is a big difference between them. and now. And although the forces that are still around are equally shameful and equally shameless as those in 1995, they are no longer directly attacked only against the Marcos. Whereas in 1995, that was still partially that I see. So, is it an easier campaign? No, because a well-known campaign is never easy. It's always quite difficult. You always have to find ways to get your message across. It is always can be confusing and distracting, so you always have to find your focus on what it is you have to say. You also have to be constantly knowledgeable about the circumstances of the campaign, what are the changing issues, the changing debate. So that kind of thing never really changed. But again, vis-a-vis specific to the Marcos, I think the change is that we are not an issue. And although there are still forces working against us directly, specifically against me, in particular, it is not as a Marcos issue. It is not the general public thinking that way. It is not the general power structure thinking that way. Whereas it was before.
How will your campaign address the issues of the youth?
Well, I hearken back simply again to my experience under my father's time in Bataan Barangay. And because of that experience, I am the author of the law that created the Philippine Youth Commission. That's my the SKs are there because of that law. And that is the continuing effort by me to include young people in government, young people in the different walks of life in society. But it's always been our view that the youth have a very important part to play. And it is always saddening for me to see that we quote all of these figures about the demographics of the Philippine population today. And I'm sure all of you have heard it, I'm sure all the kids have heard it, that the 30 and below voters comprise close to 54%. And that if the youth would vote together at the block, they would be the ones electing all our people, from the president to the barangay governor, down to the, it's all the kids. However, unfortunately, it's also the kids who have the lowest rate of voting. They are the largest bloc, they vote the least. The smallest percentage of the young people in that bloc vote. So it is a constant reminder to me that we have to get young people involved. We need young people involved. We need new ideas, we need new energy, new initiatives, new blood. It is absolutely necessary for any organization, and I'm not talking only about political organization, for any corporation, for any business, for any undertaking, that there be new ideas. We do not stand still. And unless young people are directly involved in politics, for example, then we will not get the progress. We will still be doing constantly the same things that we have done before. And one of the main problems that I think that we find ourselves in is that since 86, each of the intervening administrations have suffered from a kind of inertia. And wherein they just show up, and when a problem crops up, they say, what did they used to do before? We'll do that. But the world has changed very, very many times already, since 1986, since the last 10 years. And the world has changed in many, many fundamental ways. I mean, I was in a school yesterday, and as part of this, in answer to the same question, I said, can you kids, they were the average 20 years old, can you imagine a world without a computer? Can you imagine a world without cell phones, without the internet? And they also responded me blindly. And obviously, of course, they said, why bother? They exist. And I said, I just wanted you to realize that there was a time when those things would not exist. And the world has changed a great deal since. But if you look back, and we'll use again that same example, no digital, no cyberspace, no internet, no laptop computer. The problems that we were facing then, the leaders then were providing solutions. If you look, this is 2010, the problems that we're facing now, they're still providing the same solutions. But those solutions are no longer relevant. It is already a different world. And there are solutions available now to us that we didn't have before. There are technologies that are available to us. We can do things now that we couldn't do before. There are new techniques that we intended to the concept of what is acceptable in government has changed. So it is necessary, it is imperative, it is the lifeline of any organization, and especially for something as important as a political organization, it is absolutely imperative that you are aware of the time around you. I mean, the different trends, the different changes. It doesn't mean that you just keep trending and that you follow every fashion of the thing that comes out. But to realize, to know that the general direction that the world is going, and to see that how that affects the circumstances here in the Philippines, and to how it affects the options that are available to an administrator, a leader, a president, to apply the problems that are being faced. And the young people will provide that input. It is really for young people. And young people will come, we will debate at nauseam about who is better, we are not any more. Young people will say, that's old, they have to do it. But we must have the debate. Whether or not whoever wins the debate, we must have the debate. And if young people are not part of politics, if young people are not part of society, if young people are not part of the debate, then we will do again, we will revert back to what we used to do all the time. And we will come up with the same answer, and we will find ourselves in the same position that we are now in. Because if we apply the same solutions to the whole problem, those solutions brought us here. Obviously, they don't work, because look at us now. So we have to find a better way of doing. And I think young people have an enormous part to play in finding those important. You know about things that we don't know about, because our attention is elsewhere. So that is my view on what we need to be, what people should be. I think even the school, we should define it even more strictly. That is not you aware. Who was what you said? Do not trust anyone who will praise you. What was said? That was said by the 60s Vatican. Abby Hoffman said that. It's a book. Do not trust anyone over 30. Because that was the social revolution of the 60s. And that was the feeling that they have nothing to offer anymore. Or they are contriving, or they are conspiring to make the world disadvantage the young people in their 20s. Which is not, which is okay. So it's a little bit inflammatory. But I guess that was the purpose of him saying it, so people will think about it. And we have to continuously think about it, and we have to continuously accept that there are new things going on in the world, and we have to incorporate that in all the people. And that's what young people, that's the purpose of young people.
Hi.
Thank you.
Do the windmills really work? And do you have things regarding how much energy is conserved?
I love the question.
Nice.
Good job.
They're actually electric fans. The windmills work. Windmills and wind turbines are well developed, very mature, well understood technology. It really is very simple. You have a form of energy. The wind, it turns those blades, the cells, and top of oil within the magnetic field. And that generates an electrical current. That's how every turbine, every generator works. So it's well understood how to make an efficient turbine, how to make an efficient wind turbine. And they have been quite successful. They provide when at full production, they provide 34 megawatts of power, 34.1 megawatts. There are 20 turbines in it also. So they do work, but you must have sufficient wind. And that is why we must not give the impression that windmills is the solution to all utilities. It's not. It's simply isn't. The windmills are a specific solution to a very practical problem that Ilocos Norte had. And that problem was that Ilocos Norte is very far from the sources of the power. And so the transmission lines are hundreds of kilometers from that. When you want to do that to transmit that power to Ilocos Norte, any problem along that line, hundreds of kilometers, 600 kilometers, and they've got to be to Malacca sa Manila. Any problem along the 600 kilometers, puto lang po yan din natin sa or nag-a-fluctuate, nag-ipasang pag-a-fluctuate. When we were talking to industrialists and saying, telling them to come in to Ilocos Norte and invest and build plants and factories and whatnot, they said, we cannot because the power is too dirty. It's not, it fluctuates na, or this changes, the down, masisira ang makinaria natin dito. So we cannot put in. So we said, how do we do this? We have to solve this problem. Because we cannot have investment, we need to get a diet. And so I remember that there was a proposal a few years before that to examine wind power. And we did, we studied it. At that time, I'm talking about 95, 96. At that time, wind power was not viable yet as a commercial sector. But we couldn't find a way to make it big. And I knew the government was not going to fund it. So we had to get a commercial entity to come and invest, bring in their own capital. But the only way to do that is to show that they will in fact get a return on their investment. So at that time, hindi kaya. Now, when we were trying to examine the problem, like binalikan ko and I tried to look at the figures had changed because the technology had improved. They had a better understanding of how to harness the wind. And basically, the numbers got much, much better. And wind power then was much more acceptable than it had been before. You know, in the calculation of risk, you know, it's the income over 1 plus I is the influence rate. That's the risk that you can add that. Bumaba na yung risk. So, it became viable. And that's why we looked into it. Put the package together, the financing was still very difficult. Because it was still new. And even with our dealings with government were not that easy because we went to the Department of Energy and we said, oh, anong kailangan rin yung mga licenses, mga certificate, mga permit. And they looked at us and said, hindi naman yan, ano sa palagay nyo? And I said, why don't you know? I said, because we've never done it before. So together with the Department of Energy, we put together, slowly we went to the thing and the process is more established now. But in any case, and we had a bit of a windfall because the actual ROI for our wind originally was about 8 years, 22 years. Which is not bad for power because it has a long term. But when the Kyoto Agreement was signed, and within the Kyoto Agreement, there is the provision for the payment of carbon credit for methane or any greenhouse gases that is not being put into the air. It's given a dollar value, and whoever is above is doing the operation so that the like reducing power without putting carbon into the without carbon emission, you get carbon credit. Once that carbon credit came in, that 22-23 years, it ran immediately down to 12-14. So you can see that those initiatives work. They make a difference. Now our trouble was to find more wind turbines. Because everybody was buying buying the turbine, there was the availability was limited. So the price started to go up, which is the opposite of what we were seeing. The price had begun to go down because there was a larger volume of production. So, but it started to go up. Kasi naging fashionable na mid-energy in the last 2-3 years. In fact, I went to China because China started to produce wind turbine. And I asked them if I could guarantee a supply of wind turbine. And we did. We got the supply. So then I put together another group. And just last month, all of the itches for the continuing development of the windmills in Ilocos Norte have been solved. And they are bringing in more wind turbines. The Ilocos Norte, as I said, we are now producing 34 to 35 megawatts at full production. And the potential apparently in Ilocos Norte itself, that's the problem, is 250 megawatts. So if we are able to exploit that to its fullest, we will have close to 120 number of turbines, whereas now we have 900. Now, I keep stressing when I say that the production is 34 megawatts at full production. We are not always at full production. When we're in the summer, the wind will turn. There's no wind. So it's that. So you, it is not the answer to everything. It is an additional help, but you still need to take care of your base load. The load that you need to satisfy, the demand that you need to satisfy, even when you don't have wind, even when it's summer, even when it's typhoon. So the analysis is always net. Now again, I'm not saying that windmills are the answer to every place. Most places, in fact, have very little wind, but have not enough wind, do not have enough wind to justify a windmill. But I think the thought process and the process of problem solving that we apply for our wind farm is something that can be applied to the other problems that we face. I keep talking about new technology, new methods. I think that we should do more of that. Like, I always explain it this way. Ang Pinoy, we're always kawawa. We're always kulang sa pondo, we're always kulang sa training, kulang sa tao, kulang sa mga, we're always kulang. Whatever it is we want to do. And if you ask a European, or you ask an American, or a Japanese person, say, this is what we want to do, these are our assets. And look at it and they'll say, the simple yan, because it's just kulang, you just don't have enough of anything. And, but we Pinoys, we are so resourceful and ingenious, we find ways to make it happen. And yung nagdi-discounting natin, tao yung discounting Pinoy. Yung Pinoy may discounting, yung tayo, may kaya tayo gawin, na ibang tao hindi nila pinagawa, but they don't have to. So, that is what I believe we need to do. We discounting natin Pinoy style. That's the way I think we need to oppose the problem. That we have to be more objective, we have to be more logical. Since we're on the subject anyway, look at the power crisis that we're having now. Here in the zone, you guys don't feel it yet. I was in Mindanao, I was in the Visayas. 8 hours to night. Kung 6 hours sila, in one day, swerte na sila. And, you know, everything just shuts down. Now, why did we get into this situation? Because the determination of what kind of power generation we should adopt or invest in the Philippines, those decisions were made on a political basis. This is a technical and scientific question. You cannot solve a technical and scientific question by answering it in politics. And that's why we are here. Because dinalagyan ng kulay lahat ng desisyon sa nagulay. Dinalagyan ng political question. To have a coal-fired or oil-fired plant of a certain size, that decision has nothing to do with politics. Has nothing to do with what party you belong to. Has nothing to do with who's running against your brother for mayor. But that's the way we design things in the way we've been designing things. We have been telling this, the Malacanang, we have been telling the government, we have been telling this administration for years that this was going to happen. And they have done absolutely nothing. And I don't know now that we're going to talk about emergency powers. And my facetious answer to that is that why? If Gloria has emergency powers, would she make it rain? Is there going to suddenly be water in our dams? Of course not. But that's, of course, a facetious answer. What, in fact, do they want to say emergency powers for? What do they do? The last time we had emergency powers for power crisis, we ended up with power parity. We ended up with a PPA agreement that we are still paying for up now. And we continue to pay for power that we didn't use. But the owners got completely moving. We had power barges, which is probably the most expensive way to produce power. And so, in essence, the using emergency powers to answer a power crisis has been a bad experience for us. Knowing that, let's learn our lesson and let's do it again. So, we just have to come and think about what needs to be done. Now, power plant, how long does it take to put up a power plant? Let's say we decided, the government decided today, that they were going to put up oil fire, whatever, power plant. It will take a minimum, let's say 5 years. You have to decide on the design, you have to bid it, you have to find the funding, you have to actually build it, you have to train the people. That takes a long time. It's not going to solve this crisis here today. What is available to us? Bataan. Everybody jumps up and down and nuclear power. But again, let's think about it, at least talk about it in a sensible way. That is the classic example of the Bataan nuclear power plant. That is the classic example of a technical and scientific question being answered in a political way. And I believe we came to the wrong answer. And that is clear because we now have a power crisis. If the Bataan nuclear power plant was allowed to go online, we would not have a crisis. And now it is there. It sits there, it's available, it has been maintained. My good friend, Congressman Mark Huanco, has been campaigning very, very hard and quite rightly that we should at least think about rehabilitating it. Putting it online, it never went online. We have since discovered that Ramos knows all the fuel runs a lot without anybody knowing, so that will extend the lead time. So that is a solution. Okay. Now there are people who don't agree with it. They say that nuclear power is somehow unsafe. We make all the arguments that the sister power plants in Korea have been producing power for 20 plus years without any problems whatsoever. And in fact, they are ordering 6 more. And Korea's decision at that time also become a supplier of power of components for the power plant. That's another story. In any case, if those arguments are still not acceptable, my question to those who criticize nuclear power as a source, as a solution, is my question to them is very simple. If you don't like that solution, what's your solution? How do you kapalit yun? Now, it's all very well to sit back and like, hindi pwede yan, yan, hindi yan, 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 yan. Okay, ayaw rin yan. Ano ang kapalit? Where will we get the power that nakulang sa ano? You still have to answer that question. And so, that's why it's nice to be outside government, because it's very easy to criticize. But when you're in government, when you're supposed to be running the thing, you have to find those solutions. And sometimes there are no easy answers, there are no popular answers. But the answer, you still have to provide an answer. So I'm trying to, I'm ventilating this, because for me, we need to discuss this thing. And we need to provide an answer, and this is a possible one. And once again, if people do not agree with me that they think that nuclear power is somehow unacceptable for whatever reason, then I invite them to provide a alternative. So yes, the windmills do work. This your challenge to windmills.
Congressman, going back to the corruption thing you were saying a while ago, been in the Senate for 12 years. And I handled some of the senators' projects. How would you prosecute government officials or politicians? Example na lang sa projects. Pag big budget yung project, alam na natin kung saan dadaan, lahat binibigyan from the governor to the regional director, district engineer, mayor, COA. How would you prosecute such ganun kadaming taong involved sa isang malaking project?
Then mag-santo na naman by the big guy, you have the best of all. Everybody
and who would prosecute, for example, a senator?
Well, at the very least, it has to be investigated, it has to be exposed. Eh, hindi naman pinag-uusapan, it's already, it's all, you know, okay na pinag-uusapan na more than more. And we all be able to see that. But because pinapayagan eh. We have to do things, we have to do business in a different way. If you allow it, it will happen. If you allow people to steal, they will. And so don't allow them to steal. Who will prosecute the senator? Yeah, masigasig na president. Masigasig na prosecutor. Masigasig na soldier. Yan naman ang dapat din ang trabaho. So, you know, again, then we can go back to the more practical things, like I said. Particular projects, it's well agreed and well understood how much a certain project will cost. If it doesn't come under that cost in time, then the contractor doesn't get paid. That's it. I'll give you an example. Because I'm from local government. You know that many projects are done, as we call it, the terminology is by the administrator. In other words, if I'm a governor, magpapalagay ako ng kasada. Ang gagamitin ko yung mga engineer ng provincial government, yung mga trabado ng provincial government, equipment. Why is it that any project by the administration is at the very least 30% cheaper than the same project in the Department of Public Works? Any answer? You ask any mayor.
Because there's no rebate.
There's no rebate. No.
SOP or kickback commission.
Maybe, I think so. I think that's the reason. So do you see how different it is, how easy it is to identify where the problem is? Now, they say that the main component of that is you have to put in a certain percentage for profit. Even then, if you allow the contractor to make a certain amount of profit, that's fine. But it's still not 30%. And I can tell you stories about roads that are not 30% cheaper by administration, they're 200% cheaper by administration. And when you see the road, it lasts a year. So, you know, I think it's very clear to people. But again, I always cite that example. That why by administration, mura-mura, maganda naman. Kasi kami mismo, pumunta ako na, i-measure yung substrate kung kapag-kapag-kapag. Kami mismo, pumunta, i-measure namin yung gano'ng kalapad, kung gano'ng kalayo yung pagsada. Whereas I guess, in the other one, maraming mga inefficiencies. So, if it can be efficient on a small scale, why shouldn't it be efficient? It's just a question of wanting to do it. And I've seen many instances where, I don't know, pwede naman eh. Nasabihin, masasabihin mo sa mga tao, at ang nagkalaw kung kumikita kayo eh. Huwag nyo lang pakitaan nito, importante. O bibigyan ko kayo ng mekanismo, at parang may kontratista naman natin, may kinita, para naman yung worth their talk. Pero huwag naman yung kalahati eh. Huwag naman magpira kayo sa project. Pusin lahat. Kasi ito mo, anong project ang magiging makalupay kung kalahati ng pondo ninakapun? Wala talaga pong plan, it's always going to happen. So, it's nothing. It's a question of changing with it. Changing our mentality, changing our culture. And to say to everyone in government, this kind of activity wrongdoing is not acceptable. I'm telling you this from the very beginning. Magkaintindihan tayo na mabuti. Pagkasalubungan ninyo, ang nabuli kayo, ikutin ka namin. If you say that, people will follow.
Would you consider assigning victory as a vindication for your parents?
I don't think anything I do has anything to do with the vindication or validation or any kind of thing like that. You know, it's not my job to vindicate my father. My father does not need me to vindicate him. My father's record will stand on its own. History will judge him, and I'm sure it will judge him well. And that is up to the historians and the academicians to decide. And whatever I do, if my father was a good president and I'm a bad governor, he's still a good president. If my father was not a good president and I'm an excellent governor, he's still not a good president. So what I do has really no effect on the quality of his administration. So no, I don't see it as a vindication of any such thing. I mainly see it as the way I view it, and when I get good response from people. Ang iniisip ko is that siguro tanggapin na yung sabi ko. Natatanggap nila na yung kung ano man ang nasasabi, sinasabi ko sa kanila, they agree with me, that these are the things that need to be done. I don't think it is in those Marcos letters. If anything, it will show what we have contended all along, that the propaganda that was hurled against us for the last 24 years was not actually believed by people. Because if all the propaganda, terrible things that were said about me, about our family, were believed by people, I couldn't be in politics. I couldn't walk down the street. But I can walk down the street. I am in politics. And that fact means that people are smart enough to know that kumumuliti ka lang yung mga talaga namin at pag pinumura kami, inakusahan kami ng kung ano-ano, kasama na lang yan sa propaganda at they don't believe it. And because also they see that many of the things are simply not true, and they see, as I said before, the comparison between my father's administration and those that have come since. And how effective government has been, how sensitive and compassionate it has been in providing services, how close government was to normal people, something that is that has diminished over the years. So again, I think that what I do is independent of my father's administration. Again, if I had been part of his administration, if I was a secretary of state or something, then maybe. But the fact of the matter was, I was not. My only time I was in government with my father as president was when I was vice governor and then governor in 86. So that's that short period. But yeah, as governor of Pinocos Norte, you don't make policy. So I guess I
want to
be taking it. I've not seen
a thing involved in policy. Another question, Mr. Congressman. Well, this may sound hypothetical, but let me ask this anyway. 6 years from now, election again, would you consider running for the highest position?
Yes. I get this question every single time. And I answer it the same way every single time. I'm running for the Senate simply because I believe that there are things that experiences I have in the local government have led me to believe that national government is completely disjointed, completely removed, completely disconnected from local communities, from local government. And they have completely lost the idea that they need to be supported by the local communities, ordinary people. That is why I ran. Because, I mean, I always quote the story, this is a true story. I remember sitting watching TV with two other governors and one other mayor, and we were listening to one of the cabinet secretaries explaining the new procedures for procurement. And you remember it was the e-bidding that we had done, had to bidding on the internet. And some is it yeah, it all sounds really good because this is the reason that I would include everybody who's possibly in the market for that.
And the problem with one another is we were saying, what are these people thinking? What planet do they live on? This is not going to work.
Not at this level, not at the ground level. We will all end up with the same people. Why? Because it's cheaper to do everything here locally. Then to do something abroad and go back here and do this, it simply won't work. And which led me to the conclusion that they don't understand, they've forgotten, or if they ever knew it, but they've lost the understanding, the feel of what's going on here at local government, what's going on here at grassroots. That's why I ran, because I really believe that national government is just. He lives on another planet of ordinary Filipino. They simply do not understand anymore what's going on in agriculture.
Look what happened to all that's happening to agriculture. Look what's happening to our school system. Look what's happening to healthcare. These are just basic services that the government is giving our people. They do not provide them. That's all they're supposed to do. Look at the power. All they had to do was sit around the table. Maybe after a week of consultation, they would have had a plan. They didn't do it. What are they doing? That's their job. So they're not doing their job any longer. So I thought this is an opportunity to provide, to give local government, small community, grassroots community, a voice once again in national government. And in some way, bring government closer, national government closer to the government. That is why I ran. It's not part of any great plan for a political. I don't know what furthering my political career. Put it even more simply, I do not give any thought to any in terms of elections and campaign. I do not give any thought beyond this campaign, this election. I do not think what party I will be in June. I think about what work I might have to do if I'm elected. I think about things that need to be done immediately if I'm elected. But beyond that, I have no political.
Sir Congressman, we all know that the problem of being a junior is that you are going to leave under the shadow of your father. Well, my question is, how does Ferdinand Marcos Jr. want to be remembered in history?
I honestly don't think maybe later on in my life I will. But right now all I think about is the work that I see ahead of me and how from that work as best as I can. I think of my career in politics and public service and how to serve the best way that I can. As to legacy, that will take care of itself. If you are sincere, you work hard, you apply yourself properly, and you are honest and humble and open-minded, legacy will take care of it.
And let me simplify my question. How does Ferdinand Marcos Jr. differ from Ferdinand Marcos Sr.?
You're asking the wrong guy. You should ask people who are around, who know my father and me well. But there's no way for me to give an objective answer to that. I do not know. I simply don't know. I don't know. Maybe we work differently, maybe we react differently, maybe we think differently. There are many lessons, of course, that I learned from my father. About how to handle situations, about how to the demeanor in certain circumstances, that sort of thing. But there are also things that I learned from him that I didn't know I learned. Sometimes there have been instances I'm confronted with a situation and I react in a certain way. Where did that come from? And I must have picked it up from the old one. So there are things like that, but I couldn't tell you what they are. Because it has never been a conscious thought to me, in me, or finally saying, this, I'll do this because this is what my mother is. I've never gone to that thought. I'll look at a situation, I'll think about it, I'll study it, I'll discuss it with other people, try and come up with the best conclusion I can. If the lessons that I learned from my father somehow apply, then maybe that solution would be similar. But if they don't, then it would be entirely different. So, again, siguro the best people to ask are the people who have worked with my dad and who worked with me. And then they'll, I'm sure, very, very good.
Well, on the lighter side, what is your favorite song?
That's
not fair.
We heard you sing.
That's like.
Oh yeah, we heard you sing.
That's like asking me who's my favorite child. You cannot. There's just too many songs.
Okay, 70s. Where are you singing?
No.
70s.
Still. So hard. I mean, but let's talk about the 70s. The 70s stands up from Stones, stands up from Beatles, stands up from who else do we listen to? Little Feet, to seniors, to there are just too many. And I always complain when if I'm asked that question. That's not fair, you know, you're really good too much. I'll tell you my favorite band. Okay? Child of the 60s and the 70s, yes.
Of course, it's the Beatles.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll go that far. If you ask me what's my favorite Beatles song, I'll strangle myself.
Question. In a sense, you're probably one of three persons who have a unique place in Philippine history. You've had a father who led the country for 20 years, and you've seen the ups and downs of what this is. And my first question is, what do you bring to the Senate as Bongbong Marcos? What can you present, let's say, to the voters? What can I bring to the Senate? What can I, you know, think? We've grown up, you know, listening to all the tall tales of sometimes you having a double or sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, the question is, see, I'm a voter. I've seen the martial law years, I've seen EDSA, two, three. What does Bongbong Marcos bring to the Senate that would make me vote for him?
A lot of practical experience in the time that I was in public service. I always say when I'm asked, why should you vote for him? Which is essentially the question that you're asking. And I always explain that, you know, all candidates that will come before you will make promises. Lahat naman ang kandidato makanap. At saka lahat ng nagsasabi, ito yung plano kung pagkaboy naging pangulo, ito yung gagawin. Mula pangulo hanggang pinakamababang konsyal ng pinakamaliit na bayan, pare-pare. Kami ang magtatanong ng pagpapalit. Kami ang mamalim at malalapit sa mga ang tingnan na, and I always tell people, is, you know, that's okay, we listen to that. But I think the difference between what I say and what other candidates say is that I can show that I have actually done the things I say I'm going to do. I have done them before. And they will say, why? You come to Longus Project, we did it. When I talk about agriculture, I know what needs to be done to fix our agriculture in the South. I know how to do it. And why do I have to do it? Because I've done it. Now, if you're talking about healthcare, we should provide insurance for everybody. Then they'll say, why do you think your experience your experience counts? Because we actually did it. You know, Ilocos Norte now has 100% health insurance for 100% of the towns in Ilocos. So I think that's the difference between what I say, my message, and maybe other candidates, in that I can point to actual experience, I can point to actual performance, I can point to a record. Like a short record, and that's why I'm actually very grateful for my time in those countries, mm-hmm. for the simple reason that it really has provided me a great deal of knowledge and experience and insight into the running, the way things actually operate on the ground, and from that you can extrapolate many things that apply at the national level. So I think that's, if you ask me why should you go through, because I've shown that I can do the things that I say I will do. I've done them in my province. I'm pretty sure that many of the things we did there apply to the national level. And if they do not apply exactly, then we will be discussing, figure natin yan, natatanapin natin kung paano gawin para it applies in the national.
Your grandmother was also a librarian, if I'm not mistaken.
She was a teacher.
Teacher, yeah. And what then, in that regard, is your stance or your legislative agenda in terms of education?
Well, very simple. We have to strengthen the education system because in recent years, the budget of the out of the national budget, 50% used to be spent on the education system. On supporting the teachers and building schools, also providing textbooks, all of what you know. The past years, our budget for education as a percentage of the national budget has continued to decrease. Whereas before, umabot na tayo sa 50%. Now, we're averaging rather 50%. Now, it is 16%. And it is very clear the effects of that lack of interest and attention that the national government has given to education. And so, at the time when we were spending half of our money on education, we were the most literate country in Asia. We were the best English speakers in Asia. We were the best trained workforce in Asia. We had the best education system in Asia. We no longer have. We cannot say the literacy rate is exceptional. In fact, it's rather poor. We cannot say that we have enough. We don't even have enough school buildings. We don't have enough teachers. In the province, you ask for 35 items about a teacher. They'll give you 3, 4. If you're malakas, 6. And that's simply not enough because the population is growing. We don't have enough school rooms. But the textbook, the miscar. So, with that kind of attitude towards education, it's immediately wrong. And the first thing I think that you need to do is to, well, in a way, you have to start building more the infrastructure. You have to build more schools. You have to have a better system of supporting the teachers. You have to have a better system for procuring school supplies, for putting together the materials. That it be better quality for the students. And although that sounds simple, it's a massive endeavor because, like you say, if you say, oh, it has natin ang sweldo ng kapitsa na 5 piso. 5 piso now times 500,000 yata. So the system is a large one. So even little changes will have a big effect. And it's simply kulang ang ginagastos natin, which is ridiculous because it is clear to me, and apparently it's not clear to this administration, but it is clear to me that education is the most important service that the government provides its citizens. It simply is. And we are not doing that. This government no longer provides that service. 16% of our national budget. We don't have anong shortfall. Now, anong nangyayari? That's why ako talaga champion, talaga pinaglalaban ko local government. Look at the initiative. We have cities now that own universities. We have cities now that put up their own schools, that hire their own teachers. Why? Because national government's not doing its job. And this is another example of why I laugh. Because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They are not helping the situation of ordinary Filipinos on the ground, at the ground level. I don't know what they're doing, but they're not doing their job. And that and education is a primary example of why government, national government has neglected its duties as a government. And so, again, it will be to more direct answer to your question. First, we need to support the teachers. Give them more benefits. We have to give their children more scholarships. We have to make sure that they get paid on time. Although I must say, I think the new system of secondary levels has begun to kick in. That problem is beginning to be solved. We need to build more schools. We have to train more teachers. We have to train more teachers. We have to train them better. Because they didn't. I remember a few years ago, they gave the teacher one of the exams for the students, and she failed it. So that's not a good situation. So it's really basics na naman yan. Wala namang paro. So we just that is my view that we have to. and it will take money. So we'll have to have the political will to take more of the budget, of the national budget, and direct it towards our school system.
Will you support, for example, an increase in the number of years in college or college? Because right now, with the Bologna Treaty, most of the people who graduate from college are actually underqualified, so they may take an extra year or so.
I think if the quality of the education is improved, you won't need the extra year. You won't need the extra 2 years. If the teachers are well trained, if the facilities are sufficient, if the school supplies, if the equipment that's available to the schools is sufficient, then they will be qualified when they graduate. In the first place, why are they graduating? It's just to make statistics. At masabi lang na nag-graduate kami ng bilang din tao. But that's a fiction. That's an administrative fiction. Your legal fiction, this is an administrative fiction. So let's not believe in these fictions that the bureaucracy has started to
evolve.
I'd like to ask something about the monetary policy of the national government. During the time of President Marcos, you will recall that we were in a better off position so far as the national budget, the national indebtedness is concerned. We had good purchasing power and our coinage was very respectable. No? Just see the peso, just see the 2 peso coins, and look what where it is now. And look how much our national debt is now. 4 trillion from the time of your father. There's something wrong with the monetary policy because the issue once of our currency does not seem to be controlled by the Philippine government. And I think this is one of the reasons why your father was conspired against it because he resisted that. Well, my question now is, as senator, how would you address?
The problem with the debt, our national debt, is already present. You cannot have asked them to condone that debt and to just simply say that we will stop paying the service, the debt servicing, will put us in a very poor situation. Should we need to incur more borrowing? The problem is not only the level of debt that we are suffering under, but what that money that we borrow is used for. It's all right if you borrow money, so long as that money is used in a way that will provide some kind of advantage to the society. Maybe not monetary, but at least you have better health, you have better education. But in the end, all of these things are quantifiable. So if what money you borrow is used properly, then that's all right. There's really nothing wrong with that. But the way that the things that we see now, the borrowings are incurred only to cover up mismanagement in government because they weren't able to do the job that needed to be done with a certain amount of money that was available. And it is the easy answer, and they don't like to talk about it. I mean, every single sauna I sit there and I listen to how wonderfully well our economy is going. And I look and I leave the Batasan building and I look out down the road and I see that we're not doing well. I don't know what they're talking about. These people are hungry. These people have no jobs. These people cannot send their children to school. So again, it comes back to good governance. Good governance. This attitude that, well, bahala na, mangutang pa tayo, tapos bahala na, kasi 6 years from now, hindi na naman tayo, problema na hindi yan. And that's that kind of attitude, and we're continuing to dig our dugs deeper and deeper and deeper. We have to make our systems, our institutions, more efficient. So that fewer borrowings, then we can use that money as efficiently as possible. And there again, we come up against the corrosive influence of corruption. I'm sure you the oft-quoted statistic by the World Bank, which says that close to 45% of all foreign funding for foreign-funded projects is lost through theft, essentially, to corruption. So if you immediately fix that problem, we immediately almost double your fund immediately. And so maybe you would be more. But that is one. Inefficiency is another thing. You need to fix the inefficiency. The bureaucracy has been allowed to deteriorate because of politicization. They are politicizing even the bureaucracy. And of course, there's always an element of that. But I remember the time when the civil service was so qualified that the civil servants ran the government well. The civil servants could, when whoever was in charge, whoever was in place, the civil servants knew their job, they were well trained to do their job, and they did it efficiently and quickly. And we no longer have to, because we continuously, again, make these decisions as to merit, who should belong in the social and the civil service, not on merit, but on politics. Inulungan ako niya nung kulay nung eleksyon eh. Patani ganyan niya, kailangan natin eh. There's always an element of that. But there has to be a hardcore within the civil service that is competent, that is committed to public service, and that is not politicized. Once we take out the politics, because it's those political decisions that are ours. It's the political thinking that is applied to non-political decisions that gets us into trouble.
So do you see that the national debt will follow the trends of ballooning more instead of
income? Well, if we don't change the way things the way we do things, then yes, it will be the inertia that I spoke about earlier. That's one of the reasons that I joined the Nacionalista Party and under Manny Villar. Because no person can have been so successful if they did not know how to run their organization efficiently and well. And I'm hoping he will bring those skills that he applied to his businesses to government, and you will see that the way government is run is not efficient, is not cost, is not productive, and hopefully we will be able to institute those changes that are obviously necessary in the way government is run. We have to put back some common sense already into the things that we do. It's always politics, yeah. But after the proclamation, kamala, even this idea. This idea that we have, that you see everywhere, because it belongs to the other guy, the project, they'll stop it. Even if it's maraming tinutulungan, even if it's a good project.
Like the Bataan Airport.
Well, that's one example, and many, many, many others. And you see it at the national level, and you see it at the local level.
By the way, that's not the way we should do it. Is it not a fact that during the time of your power, the Filipino people were able to acquire their own? That paid for it, and then Joker Arroyo comes around and says, he returned it to the law officials, just like that.
For nothing.
Yes. Yeah. What do you think about
that? I think we are suffering the consequences of those actions. Again, political thinking applied to non-political problems. That's what gets us in trouble.
It's outright stealing from the Filipino.
We have made that convention many times.
One of the things I look for when I am trying to select a candidate is whether that candidate, after being elected, will still remain transparent. Because sometimes transparency is something promised during the campaign, but then you don't see it anymore afterwards. What would be your own personal style in terms of keeping yourself transparent to the people? That's the first question.
Physically transparent?
Yes, and even in terms of your own disclosures, anything that's personal to you. Then number two, if just to start off the transparency question, are you
this may be unfair at this point because you may not be ready, but can you give us an idea what your net worth is?
What's my latest sum? My latest sum was, I think, 60-something, 70-something, I don't really know. But it was in that region.
Million. Pesos?
Yes. I wish. If it was dollars, so pag on yun ang television, ako lang lang makikita ninyo. Binilig ko na lahat. But again, it's just I have an advantage. When I came back in 91, I started with nothing. Absolutely nothing. I inherited nothing from my parents but my good name. And that's why it's very easy for me to explain everything that I have. Because it is something, it has been the fruit of what I have done since my return from the United States to the Philippines in 1991. So, napakadali para sa akin. Wala akong mga, for all intents and purposes, my financial life began in 91. Before that, it was derived from my father. After 91, it was all mine. So, madaling paliwanag, madaling ipakita kung ano yung mga pangyayari, ano yung mga naging ano yung asset namin, kung meron kami pinasukan na project, kung kumita, magkano kinita.
How do you support your family?
How do I support my family? Well, again, I can point lots of assistance from friends, from my family, back to the advantages of being Ferdinand Marcos. Marami silang binibigay sa akin ng opportunities. Like businessmen that I know, they'll say, why don't you go into this? It looks like they make a little money on that one and that. And some of the properties that were sequestered, that were taken away, have been returned because we won cases. So, dahan-dahan may mga lumalapit ko, so, bumabalik sa pamilya, bumabalik sa akin. So, I always tell my accountants and my lawyers, when you do the statement of assets and liabilities, be truthful. Because anything you put there, some kind of deception that you try to do, mahuhuli. As we have seen with the last year, marami tayo nakita mga nag-ahulihan sa statements and assets and liabilities. So, I'm at an advantage because I can very clearly show when I landed in Manila in late October 1991, my bank balance was maybe $250. Kinasa ako lang. I simply took everything away.
Great question about this one. Which path would you follow? Privatization? Or the management style of your dad, wherein the basic services are meron big say on government.
I think you have to differentiate what is the kind of activity that you're talking about. If you are talking about something like privatizing something like electrification, I think that may be a mistake because government that is. That is something that you need to. Yeah, but there are other like those the utilities, because sometimes a private enterprise will cease operation at least partially if they're not making money, and you don't as a government you don't want them to cease operations. You don't want them to cut the power. You don't want them to close the road. You don't want them to do all of those things. So. Ang problema kasi pagka may social cost na, when the profit motive intrudes into and has social effects. In other words, na because tinanggal nga yung operation, wala nang trabaho yung tao, then there are social effects to that which you don't want. And besides, much of the basic infrastructure of any country, of any economy, is very very large scale, so it must be run following a large-scale plan of the whole country. Like, let's say, if you take it to its ultimate, and you've seen these futuristic movies about it, let's take it to its ultimate, privatize the police. Why is that wrong? Because when pag hindi na kumikita yung police, hindi na trabaho. Eh, kailangan yung police, kailangan kahit anong nangyayari, nandyan yan. Privatize the military. Eh, kung ayaw nila, hindi ka kulang yung binibigay mo, hindi sila lalaban. Eh, sinusugod na tayo ng anong invasion force. So you cannot, there are certain things that really we cannot do without.
So in short, you would like to follow the model of wherein the government will now kneel down. Like for example, some oil companies, right?
I think, in the oil companies, what was the solution to the problem of the fluctuating price of oil? It wasn't to privatize the, and it wasn't either to nationalize them. What was created was the economic, was the energy reserve fund, wherein a certain number of pesos per gallon that was bought went into that fund. And what was the fund used for?
In my
OPSF. The fund was used for, pag mababang presyo, we buy a lot of oil. Pag mataas ang presyo, we release the oil or we subsidize the buying of oil. So that the consumer, the ordinary citizen, ang tingin niya sa oil price, pare-pareho. NFA. Why was NFA created? And this is one of the worst things that ever happened. NFA was created to stabilize the price of palad. Yan ang buhay ng NFA. And what they did, pagka harvest time, bumibili sila ng maraming palay, nagsa-stockpile. Pagka tag-araw, walang palay, tumataas ang presyo, magbibidaw ng stockpile para pababain ang presyo. Yung consumer, nakikita niya pare-pare ng presyo. That's what NFA was supposed to do. What does NFA do? In more price. The exact opposite of what they were created for. So, there are things that need to be done. Because, simply because, the market, financial markets are not perfect. And if you leave it to a completely laissez-faire, yung the Thatcher type of idea, the Reagan type of idea, maraming nagiging kawawa. Maraming nagiging namumulubi, maraming homeless, maraming walang trabaho, maraming hindi magpakain ng pamilya. But that's because the market decides simply on financial basis. Government should not decide on a financial basis. Government should decide on a social basis. That lahat ng mainstream na tutulungan at wala rin ang disenfranchised. Kahit yung disenfranchised, yung mga marginalized, natutulungan mo rin. So, the markets, the financial markets are good only to a certain extent. Beyond, like, you're talking about distribution of wealth. You're talking about social peace. All of these things, the market has no place. So if those are the elements that you are trying to address, then I think the job of government becomes more prominent and the job of private enterprise becomes less.
Sir, I have a question though. Actually, I've been a very avid supporter of Filipino sports. So
what's Filipino sports?
Yes. So what's Bongbong Marcos gonna do with the POC and PSC problem so that we can finally get the Olympic gold medal?
The problem is that they are not beholden to anyone except the Olympic Committee. I remember when I was first in Congress, we investigated the NSH. We couldn't do a thing. It was clearly shown that they were corrupt. It was clearly shown that they were favoring certain athletes over others for whatever reason. It was clearly shown that they were stealing money that was supposed to be given to the, they were pocketing money that was supposed to be given to the athletes.
That was POC, right?
NSA, yeah, POC. And we said, wow, we have Congress, we are the legislature. What can we do? Not a thing. Because they are under the POC. And they say, you talk to the POC, you talk to the International Olympic Committee. Unless they remove us, nobody can. What can they put? Some of those people, that I'm talking 92, 93, were there before my father became president. And they're still there. I don't know. Yeah, some of them are still there now. And they're still continuing to do what they're going to do. Now, siguro, if government had a more had been more involved in sports, in the funding, in the encouragement of sports, then they would have more say. But since government has completely removed itself from any kind of health sports program, they would not be fine. Okay, but again, but in sports, I think you have to also decide in how you handle two different things. Is government there to provide a sports program so we have healthy children? Or is government there to encourage champions? Those are two different activities. And in my view, I think that government is there to provide a widespread grassroots sports program so that all kids are exposed to some kind of sport, that at least 2 times a week they play some sport and get some exercise. And sports is good for the mental growth, emotional growth of all kids. And you see this all the time. So it's good. It's good to have sports there. And everyone should be exposed to it. All the children should have an opportunity to participate. I think to get your gold medal, your Olympic gold medal, you'll need corporate sponsor. Like now, it's an informal situation where you have wealthy people who are interested in a sport. Like, yung ninong ko, the ninong ko, was always involved in basketball. Kasi interesado siya. So, kaya gumagasto siya, pera niya, dinagasto siya. Now we have several others who are interested in badminton, in boxing, whatever. And they put out their own money. So, I think that's the way to divide up that kind of activity. Because, mahal din gumawa ng sampo, it's not especially if, medyo nag-loosen na yung definition of professional versus amateur. Which makes it maybe just a little easier, but it's still very hard. So, we'll see if we can, again, change the attitude towards sports. It's like sports is a little bit like health, in the sense that no politician wants to spend, because they cannot show anything. You know, when I was governor, a third of my budget went to health. And they said, why do you do that? I said, because it's important that people are well, that they're not sick. I said, but you know, when campaign comes along, wala na may pakita. Look at the school building I built. Look at the career that I made. You should vote for me again. Eh, ano sasabihin mo? Tingnan mo yung anak ko, walang sakit. That's not very nice. The same with sports. Tingnan mo, galing mag-football. You know, nananalo tayo ng medals. That's not, that's why that direct, that immediate gratification, it's not available. That's why it's so hard to sell to politicians, especially if we're thinking only in the very short term, which unfortunately in the Philippines we do think in the very short term.
Mr. Congressman, are you one of those people who have deep anxiety over the success of the whole automation project?
Yes, I am. I sincerely am. I was always happy to see that we were doing something about the problems that we experienced during election day and afterwards. But the way that it's been implemented is gives one great as the English would like to say. Because all of the safeguards that we had are slowly being removed. And we were wondering why, and all of the problems that are facing almost every week there's a new problem. It started with the teachers' training. It was supposed to start in September. It's only beginning now. At least we're in March. The voters' head. We did an informal run. We took 100 people. We printed a ballot. We just printed it, but it wasn't even the back and forth, it was just one very long ballot. And we asked 100 people to come in, volunteers to come in. And we said, go register your vote. And they went in. And some got it right, it shaded the circle, the lips. And some checked it. Some encircled it, some crossed. So the net effect of this is that 30% of the 100 ballots were spoiled. Now, voters' ed is so poor that it poses the question: is a 70% if you spoil 30% of your ballots in an election, is that election still valid? It's hard to say. I mean, as a mathematician, I can make you an argument that it's not. Or a very easy argument that it's not. You know, the levels of confidence and things like that. But ang daming talagang problema. Ang inaano namin is that eto bang mga problema nito ay dahil napakalaki ng problema. To implement the automation is a big problem. And it requires the teaching, a whole change in the system. And inevitably, in a big project like that, there will be glitches. Are these just glitches that we are coming up against? Or are they deliberate so that they will fail the election?
Yeah, that's my question. Yeah. Do you anticipate a failure of elections?
I am sure that there are people who are hoping that they can fail the election. Because I don't know whether these problems that we see are part of their effort or not. But what I say to them is that don't try. Because what will happen is that people will not accept what you are trying to do. People will rise up, and I guarantee that if they try to do it in May, the political system of the Philippines will be different in June. And I will be revolutionary, not evolutionary. Everything will change. And the power structure will change, not to the benefit of those who have tried to fail the election, but it will be chaos. And if that is what they want to do, then they must understand they will fail. They will fail. We will not accept it, we will not allow it to happen. Even this power crisis, is this part of all this conspiracy? Baka naman masyado na tayo conspiracy minded. You know? Kasi we believe everything we read on the internet. But is it part of the effort to get us used to the idea? Because nga naman, we've had El Nino before, right? We've had brownouts before. But not during elections, specifically in the election where Kuryente was so critical to the success of the election. Why did they end up like that? Makes you think. And you have to think about it. What we do, I don't know what else we're left with. What we're left with is a citizen's pantay na naman, like we always
have. Sir Congressman, have you come to the conclusion that somewhere, somehow, sometime, this COMELEC needs drastic changes?
Hello, Garcia, hello?
Have you come to that conclusion?
How can you not come to the conclusion if it's very clear that, look at lang, yung Marcelo sa Maguindanao, that wasn't because there was rebellion. That was so that they could block off the area and destroy all the evidence of electoral impropriety in Maguindanao that you and I have all heard about and all suspected, and the proof was there. So it wasn't the arms, it wasn't the money, it was the ballot boxes, it was the ballots that were there, and the iwan. Not sinuha nila, kaya nila minarsal yan eh. Paliwanag mo ba walang rebellion eh?
Well,
if there was a rebellion, why did they not continue the martial law? They finished the martial law in 1 week because ako na nila lahat ng kailangan nila makuha.
And in the seeming fragility of our democracy, what are the things in your view that should be done?
Oh gosh, how much time do you have? Marami tayong kailangan gawin. But I guess in the very short term, in the next election, the main thing that we have to do, and it all boils down to this, is make some intelligent choices. That's why I hope that digital media, non-traditional media, has a role to play, because you can inform people in ways that were not available before, and that people pay attention to you in ways that they do not pay attention to the traditional media and the traditional sources of information. But all that will help, especially young people, first-time voters. These are the people that really need all the information at hand so that they can make intelligent choices. believe me, if we make really intelligent choices in our choices of leaders, we will be in such a better place. Because much of our problems comes from the poor quality of leadership that we have had in the last 2 years. The leaders that don't know what they're doing, or they're negligent, or they're delinquent, or they don't really care. If we get people in the club, we're okay, how do you say it? So, mamili tayo na mag-usay-usay sa mga tao, na may, at the very least, capability, that they have capability of actually putting a plan together and making it work, who have actually some compassion for people that who really want the Philippines to be a better place 5 years down the road, who really want to leave this place better than when they found it. Those are the kind of people we need. It sounds boring, it sounds idealistic. But without idealism, where are we? We're back to we're back to cynicism. We're back to inertia. We need to understand that the choices we make in May in an election are not just choices that you think about for 3 minutes. You make the choice. You leave the ballot box. You leave the precinct, and that's it. These are choices that you will have to live with for the next 6 years. Never mind those who are at an advantage. The rest of the country will have to live with. Kung mahirap ka, kung mga masama ang napili natin, mas hihirap ka pa at mas tatagal yung kahirapan mo. So that is how important this is. But again, you know, it brings us to the machinery, both buying and all of that. And suppose the best way to empower Filipinos to vote wisely is to give them a better economy. That way, the 1,000 pesos they're being offered is not so desirable as it is now. It's all a better now. So, I don't know. It's a multifaceted problem. But again, we must find ways to allow our voters to make better, more intelligent choices in the leaders that we choose. Until we get good leadership, we will not.
Well, for the information of the congressman and everybody here, this is the first time in Philippine, this is the first time in world history, I mean, that a totally manual electoral system will go into a full automation system. So the transition is quite wide.
It's not actually a full automation. It's a misnomer. The election, upcoming election, is not automated. The counting is automated. But nothing else about the election is automated. A fully automated election is what they have. You press the candidates you want, you pull the lever, and you leave. That's it. Finish. That's fully automated. Eto, manual pa rin yung pagtulog eh. It's the counting that's automated. It's the data transferring that's automated. So we still have a way to go before we can call our elections automated.
Mr. Congressman, as a senator, what will be your first agenda for the day? And the other follow-up question is that I'm slowly losing hope in the system. Can you give me encouragement that the Pinoy can be great again? And how long?
Do not lose hope. You cannot give up on our country. You cannot give up on our country. If you give up on our country, and enough Filipinos give up on their own country, all is lost. If we do not continue to hope, if we do not continue to try, then let's just go do something else. Let's just go, I don't know, go to a small island and live there and just fish for a living and be happy with that. But you must not allow yourself to lose hope. I know it's easy to do. I know it's this desperate sometimes, and I know sometimes you lose hope. You cannot understand why you continue to work, why you continue to suffer through all the problems that you're suffering to very little effect. But this is our country. Who else is going to do this for our country? Look at this. These are our people. These are our country. Who else is going to do it for them but us? If we're not going to help ourselves, nobody's going to come and help us. So, and it is in times like this, especially where there's very little reason to rejoice in anything, it's hard to keep that yourself in that frame of mind. That we must continue to work. We must continue to fight. We cannot give up. give up on our dream. We cannot give up on our dream. And it is a mantra that perhaps all politicians, all of those who are in opposition, should do 1,000 times every day. Because we see so many of them, in fact, already have given up. But I won't, and I hope you don't. Because if we do, kawawa naman. I have 3 children. Kawawa naman yung mga anak ko. Kulapit ko na. I go on campaign. I see thousands of children wherever I go. Kulapit ko na. We have to do something for them. If we've given up on ourselves, let's not give up on the children. Let's not give up on our children.
Mr. Congressman, I think we've established that you're not the dog
politician. No.
No, you're not the dog
politician. I'm not the dog. It wasn't the dog. I'm a replacement. That's the story. Nawala na yung rule na ako. Nawala yung... Come on, tell me, you don't know this story.
I forgot it. Okay. I just know that. But
I have been talking about...
They don't know what this.
You know, yeah, the kids don't know. I've been talking about this for 30 years. I swear, 30 years.
Okay, the youth don't know, like 75%.
The story is like this, okay? The story is that, if I studied in England for a few years, the story was that is that when I was in England, I got into a fight. When was the first time you heard this story, Paul? 30 years, di ba? Oh, 30 years na to. Oh. Anyway, the story is that when I was in England, I went into a pub. And as happens in pubs, I got into a fight. In that fight, yung nakawan, sinaksak ako, patay ako. I'm dead. Bongbong is dead. So, this is where it gets interesting. My parents then decided to find another boy who looked like me, who was the same age as me, was N percent that as me, their son, to the public. And that the person you see now is the replacement, not the original. That's the story.
You sound like your dad.
Huh?
You sound like your dad.
I do sound like my dad.
You sound like your dad, but
your research. But I have many of the same genes. No, in any case, speaking of genes, the suggestion was immediately raised. Oh, may DNA na ngayon. Magmatest ka para maliwanag. Sabi ko, iisip ko naman po din sabi ko. Hindi, okay din maging urban legend eh. Pagka naayos ko na yung problem, pagka na-prove ko na natin na wala na yung urban yan, wala na tayong pag-uusapan. So, let the story go. It's funny though, because when I go to schools and I open the floor, this subject comes up. Are you the real Bongbong? And
I have... Who asked the question?
Kids. Yeah, they know the story.
Because I thought you were
the only ones. No, it comes up everywhere. And there's nothing you can do to even siguro yung pag-DNA ako na i-prove, iba na yan, niloto na lang ang result.
Ano natin,
lives? Huh? I don't know, I'm in two minds about whether the DNA thing is a good idea. DNA testing is a good idea, but that is a story that has happened, that has gone on and on and on and on, and no matter. And the way I explain is that it's really very easy to dig up old newspapers when we were still with them. When my father first became president, I was 7 years old. So look at my pictures from the time I was 7 years old to the time I was 8, 9, da-da-da-da-da, until the time we left for the United States, until 86. That's 20 years worth of pictures. And then compare them to me now. And I think, you cannot fake that much, you know? And the other question that always bugs me is, why would my parents do such a thing? Think about it. Ay, naku, namatay yung anak natin. Hanap tayo ng kamukha na, tapos huwag natin papaalam kahit ang kanino na namatay. Ihaharap natin. Why would they do that? What possible motivation would have my parents have? At most, let's say, we'll make another boy, we'll have another son. But not find one that is exactly the same, that's of the same age, nakamukha. Kawawa ko naman ako, nasiguro na plastic surgery pa ako para maging kamukha. I mean, you know. It's just such a ridiculous notion, but I guess it's such a fun story that people don't want to give it up. And now that DNA is available, it looks like even I don't want to give it up. I'm enjoying it too much already.
I have a question. What are the words that you live by that you remember from your father?
Oh,
Are there any words that you remember him saying?
I remember many, many things he said. And there's not just one thing. I have to explain it this way. My father never, you know, when I talked about earlier, I learned many things from my father, many lessons that I know I got from my father. Never did my father sit us down and say, the lesson for today is. It was never like that. We would follow him around, see what he did, we would do it. And my father would allow us to walk in any meetings, to read any paper, for the president's eyes only. But by allowing us to be that way, we learned about what he was doing and began to understand why he did certain things. And even if it was instinctive and in our subconscious, those lessons were nevertheless learned. They're in us. Kaya kasi nasabi ko, kuminsan, I'm confronted by a situation, I know how to react. I find I know what to do. And I don't know why I know. Saan ang galing yun? It must have been something I picked up from the old man. Must have been some situation, similar situation that we confronted earlier. So, what do... See, I guess this is idealism. It has to do with idealism. We were discussing once a plan. At every step, I would say, pero dad, di pwede ah. Pero dad, kasi hindi matutuloy na ganun. And he said, always plan for the idea. It may never happen, but you must always plan for the idea. You always work towards the idea. Of course, we are not God, so we will never achieve the idea. But at least by working towards the idea, you will get closer and closer and closer to it. And I turned to him and I said, what a romantic notion. And he said, I never saw you as a romantic person. And he looked at me and he says, without romance, there is no courage. Without romance, there is no idealism. Where would we be then? Okay. Yes, sir.
Question.
It's true, no? If you think about it. I try very hard to be because I want to be idealistic and I want to be brave.
Regarding the issue of the late president's proper burial.
No.
I was saying that he must be buried in the Binangulo Abbey, according to all former heads of state.
Yeah.
Now, recently, I was told, I did not monitor it, that Doina Aquino was causing a block this incident. I don't know how true that was. What are your thoughts on that? Are you pushing for your father?
It's been the position of this of my family that it is his right. As a former soldier, and very bemedaled and decorated soldier of World War II, and as the longest serving president in our history, it is only right that he be buried in the Libingan and Montreal. It is set up. It is very clearly laid out, and that policy has been unquestioned ever since it began. But this is another situation where the decisions for that were not made on a legal basis or on a righteous basis, but on a political basis. And until this is resolved, the polarization that began in 1986 will never be over. We will never have true unity in this country until you put these, because inalagyan na naman ng kulay ng politika. Tanggalin mo yung politika dyan, and let us get back to common sense. And in that way, the issue is finished. We can move on. The country can move on. Now, it's gratifying for us that all the presidential candidates have already said, at one point or another, that they will allow it. The LP candidate changed his position. When he was in Ilocano country, he said yes. When he got out of Ilocano country, he said no. So I don't know what was the thinking behind that, but at least the preponderance of opinion is to bury my father rightfully in the living.
Last two questions. Let's think of another interview.
This being together is not a new birth. I always tease the journalist. I said, in the kamayan lang kami ni Casaco, dinagay nila kami sa front page. Yung picture, dinagay nyo sa front page. Kung gusto nyo ng picture na kami ni Casaco nagkakamayan, ba't di kayo pumunta sa patasan kahit anong araw for the last 3 years, makikita mo kami nagkakamayan. So, it is something really that has been created. I guess the reporters have to find an angle, right, for their stories. So, but there have been, of course, there are clearly differences in ideology in any senatorial seat. But again, the area of commonality, the battle, the war against poverty, is sufficiently large and sufficiently important that we have decided that is what we will focus on. We will then focus upon what we have in common, and that is to fight as much poverty as we want our people. And put the other ideological battles, at least, not at the forefront. We'll continue to fight, but not at the
forefront. So you
have meetings as a minister? Oh, yeah. Wala naman sila, anong kasalanan sa akin? Magagalit sila sa akin. So what's the big deal of me sitting next to them and talking and having a coffee? We've agreed to disagree on many things. But as we work for the campaign, we work very, very well towards the campaign. We help our candidate money, we've done very well to stay unified. And again, it really derives from Senator Villar's belief that the problems we face are so complex and so difficult that we must hear from every sector as to their view on the problem and as to their view on the solution. Furthermore, when we decide upon the solutions to those problems, we implement them. Again, the problems are so profound and so difficult that to implement any solutions you might come up with will require the assistance of every sector of society for that to be successful. And that's why it is usually putting together disparate groups into one is going to be an advantage rather than a liability.
Last
question.
What can you say about the recent
appointment of General Pai? I think it was a bad idea. I think they should have extended the line so that the new president can put whoever yung gusto niya, tao niya. Just on a purely operational point, madali lang naman sa ating extension. Although that's okay because there are many competent people naman in government, in the military, and if that is the president's choice, it's of course a prerogative. But I think it would have made for a better transition if his position as Chief of Staff is extended until after the election to allow the new president to pick his own chief of staff.
Congressman, last year I wrote what tinatawag ako ng August through, it was July that I wrote my blog, and it's happening now. Question, what would be the plan of action of the Nationalista, or particularly of your camp, if mangyari yung pinatatakutan na holdover plan of this administration?
Well, the holdover plan will simply not happen because there are no provisions in law for holding anybody over after 2030. So, maliwanag na maliwanag that whoever ran
whatever happens to the proclamation, whatever happens to the election, we are done on the 30th. And if we don't have anybody in place by then, the important officials are not yet in place by then there have been many mechanisms that are being discussed, like who is the most senior senator, who is not a candidate, etc., etc. In our part, in the Nacionalista Party, we are trying to do every possible thing we can think of, and that others can think of, to make sure that the election do not fail, that the conduct of the election is orderly, it is peaceful, and it will have a credible result at the end of it all. Let me just put it this way. If somehow the forces that are conspiring to destroy this election, to fail this election, succeed in holding off proclamation for an extended period of time, the power vacuum that they will create will be filled. It will not be filled by them. It will be filled by other people.
The second one.
I saw you play the saxophone. You were great.
I tried, but my God, it's been many years. I used to be okay with it. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, I was really impressed. Kung wala ka sa politika, hindi ka ba nag... ayaw mo bang maging musician or what?
I'm still hoping to be a rock star. I still dream that one day after all this is over, I'm going to end up on stage with Mick Jagger and put on a wonderful concert. But I guess the days for that are gone. I was very, very interested in music. I studied music for years. And I, of course, flirted with the idea of continuing having a musical career, taking it up. But, you know, other things in reality intervened. In fact, even in my studies, I had hoped to study. All my training is in sciences and in mathematics. I was studying physics and mathematics for a very long time. Until I went to university when my suggested that the more practical thing to do would be to study philosophy and economics and politics. So that's what I did. So there are many things that I wanted to do, but I can still listen to good music. I can still go into the record store and buy the best music available. I can still order old stuff on Amazon. So the music has never left my life. I can, and yeah, I always say this is the only thing that really, you know, after a very long, difficult, bad day, music's the only thing that will change your mood. And simply go, you can't imagine life without music. That's my marriage. We always had music playing in our house. Even when we were laughing, that's not the tool, make a map, and piano. Always. And so, naging party palaga ng buhay. That's why all of us are all very, very musical in our own way. So, I'm still holding up for the rock star phase of my life. I don't know if it's ever going to come at this point.
Thank you.
All right.
Now maybe you might have some last words.
No, quite frankly, I think we've exhausted many of the subjects that normally we that are not completely examined. I think I just like to thank all of you for giving me access to your blogs and giving me access to your audience, and hopefully that this non-traditional medium, this non-traditional way of informing people about the issues of government, the issues in the campaign, the issues about around this election, and what candidates are doing and what their positions are. This will be an additional means to give, again, that information to people, and in that way, allow them a more intelligent choice about the election. So, thank you for that opportunity, and I encourage all of you who are listening, who are monitoring this,
Lumawala ako. Sir, naka-record. Ito na lang ang naka-record natin.
Oh, 60 gig yan.
Wala, tinanggal mo na natin. Wala lang ang internet.
That's how important it is. Let's take it seriously.
Marami kamera. Kuya, marami kamera.